All right, hello and welcome back to another episode of Just a Girl from Cleveland. This is episode 144. It's been a minute, about 2 weeks since I last recorded. I had a work trip last week in the city of Nashville. It was actually my first time in Nashville. Great city. I, you know, didn't get to go to any sporting events, but I did see both the Titan Stadium and the hockey arena where the Predators play. I don't know what the name of the arena is called, but walked past both of those, so that was good. Would love to go back there for some sporting events sometime. But yeah, it's been a minute, you know, someone's got to pay the bills in this household that consists of just me. So the only person who can pay for them is me. So I had to work and take care of that. But happy to be back this week. Got some interesting topics to get into. Different topics, I think, than I am typically discussing on here. I want to start off by talking about the women's college basketball tournament and March Madness that has been taking place for the last two-ish weeks now. And then I want to do a Browns mock draft. I went ahead and, before this podcast, went through the PFF simulator, the mock draft simulator, and made some picks. So I'm going to go through kind of just, you know, what came up in this particular mock draft, and maybe if this is something you guys like, I'll continue to do this leading up to the draft. I want to get into, you know, first round stuff in general too, outside of the Browns, because obviously the Browns don't pick until 54. So I do want to discuss how I, you know, see some of these first round prospects and what I see happening early on in the draft, especially with the quarterbacks. So we'll get into more of that as well. But if you guys like this mock draft simulator situation, just let me know. And maybe I'll do another one in a different episode as we prepare. It is now in the month of April, so we are in the month of the NFL draft. It's honestly come up pretty quickly. I feel like the offseason has flown by a bit. These last few months have just gone really quickly. So we're right there. We're, you know, a couple weeks away from the draft, about a month and maybe about 5 weeks away from the NFL schedule release. So things are moving, which is always exciting, and that's what we like to see. So let's start off with talking about March Madness. So briefly touching on the men's tournament, I just want to discuss what I would like everyone to root for in terms of my bracket, because I still have the potential to win some money. My winner is out of it. I had picked Iowa State, but I do have Purdue in the finals in my bracket, and I absolutely need UConn to lose immediately, because a lot of people that can pass me in my bracket, in the pool that I'm in, have UConn winning. So if you have no rooting interest at this point in the bracket cycle, you are out, you have nothing to root for. Root for Purdue to win and UConn to lose immediately. And that's all I ask of you. So I just wanted to start with that. But I do actually want to talk about what has been going on with the women's tournament and just the rise of popularity of this sport and how amazing and exciting that is. So obviously last night, I'm recording this on Tuesday, Monday night was LSU Iowa, the most anticipated game since the championship last year, where everyone was wondering when these two teams would match up again. Unfortunately, it was in the Elite Eight. I think everyone wishes that it was in the Final Four or once again in the championship, but they met up a little bit early. Nonetheless, still good to see them have that meeting. I think there was so much hype around it, and it was so cool to see. I think people have, other than me, have talked about this, but what makes the women's tournament right now so exciting is that people have a real rooting interest in having a hero and a villain, a team they like, a team they hate. And part of that, I think, is because these girls are staying on in these programs and on these teams throughout their entire college career. The transfer portal is obviously a thing in the women's game, but it's not as prevalent as it is right now in the men's game, where from year to year, you just honestly cannot keep track of who is on what team. And it's really hard to buy into a certain program or buy into a group of players that have, you know, come up together and are doing something special together. It's really hard to do that in the men's game right now. On the other hand, in the women's game, you have two personalities like Angel Reese on LSU and Caitlin Clark on Iowa, who people either love or they hate, and they want to pit against each other, which is what we do in men's sports. And it's what makes it so exciting. It's like it's its own reality TV show in a way. I think it's good for the sport to see the way people are kind of picking sides and wanting to choose one against the other, and just how good that is for the game. That means people care. That means people have a real interest. Hatred is a part of sports, so it kind of comes with the territory. And, you know, typically in the women's game in the past, it was more from a fan perspective, like kumbaya, let's just root for all of these women playing, which that's great. But if you want people to have a real buy-in and to really care about something, they're going to like one team and hate the other. So I think it's the best thing for the game. The only thing that I don't really get, which there was a interview that Angel Reese was doing. This was before the game. And she keeps getting questions about, like, do you and Caitlin hate each other? Like, why do you and Caitlin hate each other so much? Which people don't really ask that to male, you know, athletes, because I just think it's understood just what the dynamic is when you have a rival. And Angel explained it. She's like, me and Caitlin are friends off the court. There's no real life beef. We're cool on the court. It's a competition. I want to beat her. And that's the competitive juices get flowing in those moments. And it was just so weird that I felt like she had to explain herself in that, because that is just basic, like, sports. People have that growing up. If they're playing, you know, travel sports growing up, you have teams you like and players you like and ones that you hate that you play against. That's just kind of how it goes. So I think it still has some way to go for people to understand that these women look at the game the same way that the men do, and that it's not like, oh, why do you and Caitlin hate each other? Like, can't you guys just be best friends? It's like, no, this is, they'll be good friends off the court, and on the court, they want to beat each other. I mean, people aren't always asking, like, LeBron about, he has a friendship with all these different players in the league, and no one is questioning, like, his competition on the court because of that. You know, they're not asking those same questions. So I don't love that, but I think just Angel and Caitlin especially have been so awesome for the sport and what they've done for it. This afternoon, before I started recording, the ratings came in for the game, and 12.3 million viewers watched the game. So just to put some of that into perspective, if you haven't seen the statistics around this yet, it was the most watched college basketball game ever on ESPN. That's men's or women. So ESPN obviously does not get all of the games. They are held on multiple networks. ESPN specifically, most watched. It is the most watched women's college basketball game on record. So on any network ever, this was the most watched women's college basketball game. Very exciting. In comparison to other sports, if that doesn't do it for you because you're like, oh, that's just like college sports, let's see this on, you know, college basketball specifically, let's see this on a bigger scale, it outdrew every NBA game last season except for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. So more people watched that game than a single NBA game last season except for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. It outdrew every college football game last season outside of any of the college football playoff games. Ohio State-Michigan, biggest rivalry in sports, and the SEC Championship did better than every single one of those other games. And it outdrew every single MLB game last season. So comparing that to other sports, that is, I mean, any network would kill to get anything that could be watched by 12.3 million people on cable television these days. That is gold right there. That doesn't exist anymore because of streaming services and the way people watch things. To get people to be watching live television 12.3 million people at a time is really incredible, and it's a testament to what those two programs have built, what Angel and Caitlin have built, what the women's game in general has built, and, you know, made people want to root for them and to buy into what's happening. So that I just think that's so awesome to see. Final Four is up next, which is in the great city of Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome Caitlin to our city. She tweeted Cleveland in all caps, which got me really pumped after the game. So really excited that the city will be filled with women's college basketball fans. It's going to be awesome just for the city to have an event like this in general. You know, I love to support downtown, so it's always good to have an event bringing people in, bringing the money into the city. It's what we love to see. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the rest of these games, because I think there's still a lot of great storylines. Paige Bucket's out there. Everyone loves her too. So I think people are going to have a lot of rooting interest, even though the Angel Caitlin storyline is over. I think there's still more to be rooting for. Okay, so that is all on that. Let's get into my Browns mock draft. So the way I kind of did this is just going with the picks that the Browns actually do have in this draft. So as you guys know, Andrew Berry is a lover of trading down. And I would not be surprised whatsoever if it comes to draft day and we're, you know, it's around pick 46 and it's like some alert comes in that the Browns are trading down and trading out of their second round pick there to acquire some additional picks in later rounds. That would not shock me in any way, shape, or form. If you know Andrew Berry, it would not shock you either. Especially because they only have 5 total picks at this point in this year's draft. They gave away some of those picks in the Jerry Jeudy trade. Obviously, first round pick is not there because of the Deshaun Watson trade. So there's just a limited number of picks that they have here. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them want to get some more assets, just depending on, you know, who is on the board at that point in time when it's coming up towards pick 54. If they have a guy they really like still, maybe they will take it. But if there's no one they really love, they might just choose to draft down then and acquire some additional players. So we will see what happens there. But based on what I am doing, I am doing this under the assumption that they're not going to be trading down. I did a mock draft on the PFF simulator, like I said. So, you know, this isn't necessarily like my top player at each position of where I think we should pick. This was based on this specific simulation that was run. So a player could have already been taken that maybe I would have taken. So no one hold me to this of being like, these are exactly the players that you wanted. There's other guys I obviously like, but in this specific scenario, this is what I decided on. Okay, so one other note. With the 5 picks, obviously there are many positions that go, you know, not unaddressed in this draft. Wide receiver and offensive line are two that I would have liked to address in this draft, and I very much could see the Browns addressing at some point in this draft. There just weren't enough picks to do that, and I liked other players in these particular positions. So wide receiver, offensive line, not addressed, but very much could see them going that route. Okay, so let's start with the first pick that we have. Second round, pick 54, I took Tavondre Sweat, defensive lineman from Texas. He is a big boy, 6'4", 362 pounds. I don't need to go through his stats of every year of his career, but just going to highlight some of the important ones that give you a little bit of picture of who he is, and you know what he's done in his career. So his breakout season came in his senior year when he had 30 total tackles, 7 quarterback hits, 4 pass breakups, and that was through 13 games. He then played a fifth year, so he is a little bit on the older side. He'll be 23 this summer, which is slightly out of the typical age range that the Browns would like to go for, that Andrew Berry likes to go for. He typically goes a little bit younger, but I still think if the player was enough that they liked that, you know, that particular player, they would make that choice. It's also not a first round pick. So I think they really like doing that when you have that fifth year and you can get that second contract in at a younger age. But I don't think it matters as much when you get into these later rounds. The player is more important at that point. So in his fifth year, which was his final season in 2023, he had a career high 45 tackles, 2 sacks, 4 pass breakups, and a blocked kick. We love to see a blocked kick. That's always fun. And then he won nearly every award last season, just all of the different honors. First team All-American, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, first team All-Big 12, et cetera, et cetera. Don't need to go through all of them, but he was pretty much awarded everything you can get. A couple of his strengths, obviously size, I mentioned, massive human being, and we really haven't had bigger body defensive tackles like that in the past. So between his size, he's got a good ability to handle double teams and run blocking abilities, which is something our defensive tackles have lacked in the past. Something this team has struggled with for many years. And even though I feel like there was a Band-Aid put on it last season, I think it started to get more exposed again as the season went on. So it would be nice to have a big-bodied run blocker like Sweat. You know, he has a ways to go with his pass rushing abilities, but I think the Browns have enough talent in that department where they can start addressing some other areas and hope that he develops his skills in that area. You know, he has the size to do it. So if he can, you know, continue to work on that, I think that's a really high upside player, and, you know, can come in right away with those run blocking abilities. So that was who I took with pick 54. The second pick the Browns have is in round 3, pick 85. I took a linebacker here, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from Clemson. So I think this is another position the Browns have some needs at. Outside of JOK, I just don't feel like they've had overall great linebacker play. And really this past year was when JOK had his massive breakout season and showed exactly who he can be. He was good before that, but he was great in 2023. Beyond that, they've kind of plugged in some veterans on one-year deals here and there, and then just had some lower-level depth pieces, but really have not had another long-term piece at the position that they've invested in any way. So I think this would be a good opportunity to do that here with Trotter. He appeared in 12 games in 2023, 88 total tackles, 5.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 7 passes defended, 2 interceptions, and a defensive touchdown. Fun little stat line there. I love when they've got all of the random ones, like a defensive touchdown and stuff. Obviously, that doesn't tell you like everything about the player, because sometimes those can end up being fluky plays, or you know, you just don't know the context around it always. But I think that's just a fun overall stat line there. He didn't end up playing in his bowl game this past year, the Gator Bowl. He declared for the draft instead. Some of his strengths: good hand-eye coordination to bat down passes, speed, athleticism are some high-end traits for him. I read this somewhere about him, and I thought it was kind of funny because it just really exemplifies the way people speak about draft prospects. A writer said he has Fred Warner-like traits, and it's just like, it's funny because people just say the most bold things in the draft. Like, this is a third round pick, and you're just like, oh, he has Fred Warner like traits. One of the best defensive players, maybe the best linebacker in the league right now. Fred Warner like traits. Got it. Hopefully that works out for him. Like, so much pressure to put on the kid. I just thought that was funny to read that. I hope he is like Fred Warner if he joins the Cleveland Browns. That would be great. But yeah, I just think it's a position the Browns need, like I said, and, you know, a high upside player with good athleticism at, you know, this part of the draft in the third round at pick 85. So I liked it, and that's what I went with there. So the next pick we have, the Browns' third pick, it's in round 5. So we skip 2 rounds later here, pick 156. I took Malik Mustafa, a safety from Wake Forest. Some people, I feel like, are ignoring safety as a need because obviously the Browns just extended Grant Delpit. They have Juan Thornhill, who they brought in last year from Kansas City. Beyond that, Ronnie Hickman showed some bright spots last season, except for obviously the playoff game against the Texans, which I like to remove from my memory because he was doing so well. And then that moment just reminded me why he was probably an undrafted free agent, and, you know, why he was in the position he was in. But look, he overperformed expectations by far, and there's still so much more he probably can do. So I'm not saying like give up on Ronnie Hickman. I think there's still a lot of potential there. And just the fact that the Browns were able to bring someone in undrafted like that and get that much production out of them is already a win in itself. Beyond him, they have D'Anthony Bell and Rodney McLeod on the roster as well. So I think this would be, you know, it's not like we don't have any talent there, but I just think, you know, you're going to need to start thinking forward with some of these. There's some younger guys, some guys on shorter contracts other than Grant Delpit. So I think it's a good opportunity to bring a safety in here. I have seen this name in particular as kind of a sleeper pick on a lot of people's draft boards, on someone that, you know, is going to be taken in these later rounds, but has an extremely high upside. And I feel like I keep saying that about these guys, but that's because I know that's how Andrew Berry likes to draft. And I think that's how most teams like to draft in these later rounds. If you're not picking in the first round on guys who you feel like have already shown those traits and already proven to be those type of players, you really are drafting on potential and upside and what you see in them. So I think, you know, you have to take those swings later in these rounds. And with someone like this, even the chances are low of actually hitting on it. I think at a position of need, it's definitely worth the shot. The Browns' fourth pick, round six, now we're into. We really just don't have any high picks in this draft. Like, round two is at pick 54 is the highest we've got. It's kind of sad and less exciting. But in round six, pick 206, I took a kind of a NFL legacy player here with the bloodline at play, Frank Gore Jr., running back from Southern Miss. So obviously running back has been a topic of conversation because of the future at the position. You have an injured Nick Chubb who hopefully comes back and is able to play close to the level he was able to play at before, but you have no idea what that looks like. Beyond that, you have Jerome Ford, who I am personally just not sold on as being the future at the position for this team. They brought in Hines, who's going to have some returning duties, and I think they specifically brought him in to be a returner in a lot of ways because of the rules that have changed for kick returns. So I think, you know, Hines is obviously going to take some regular snaps at running back as well, but I think he had a specific purpose in being brought in. Beyond that, they've got Deonta Foreman. You have Pierre Strong still and John Kelly, which that doesn't do much for me. So I think, you know, taking a swing on a guy who has some NFL family history, obviously quite a legendary player in his family. And I think it's good because I like those type of players, those players that have a dad, an uncle, someone close to them in their family that has played the game, because I think they know firsthand what it takes to be successful. And I think that means a lot more than people realize, just what it looks like to take care of your body day in and day out. And watching someone do that for so long, it sets you up for success in a way that I think a lot of the younger guys that don't have those examples in their life don't see going into the league and maybe make some different mistakes. I think obviously him being around that is only a good thing that can help benefit him. I think in particular too, I liked this pick because I think Stefanski would have a lot of fun with him in terms of trick plays. We know Stefanski loves using a tight end or a running back or a receiver for some type of trick play. And Gore played both quarterback and running back. So, you know, predominantly a running back, but had spent some time playing quarterback in high school and then dabbled with it a little bit in college when he just kind of had to step up on his team at certain points in time. So I think Stefanski would have a great time drawing up some fun plays some fun trick plays there with Gore. I'm not sure if he's actually going to be available at this point. He was in this particular mock draft simulator, but a lot of people have him mocked going a little bit higher in the fourth or fifth round. So it's anything can happen. It's a possibility. But in this particular case, when I saw him there, I was like, oh, I will absolutely take that. You just never know who's going to drop, especially with a running back. Like anything can really happen there with a running back. And the final pick the Browns have, their fifth pick, round seven, pick 243, I have them taking tight end Trey Knox from South Carolina. Obviously, Harrison Bryant is gone now, so beyond Njoku, I think they are going to want to start thinking about a second tight end. We know Stefanski loves using multiple tight end sets, so I think they're going to want to address that at some point in this draft. He is a good blocking tight end and also played some receiver, so he has a lot of those good route running skills and those types of abilities. He's definitely better at, you know, running routes, getting separation than he is at making those tough contested catches. It's definitely something he struggled with in his college career, just not really showing that he can catch through a lot of contact. But it's the seventh round. You're not going to find a perfect prospect at this point in time. So you find a guy that has a couple traits that you like and you think fit well with what you are doing as a team, and you hope for the best. So that is what I took with the Browns' final pick at pick 243. So yeah, it was kind of fun to go through that. I wish we had more picks because there's so much more I wanted to do. Like I said, I really wanted to take especially an offensive lineman. I think they really need to start thinking about the future at that position, or not even just that position, all, you know, the full offensive line, on what they are doing moving forward with that group of players. They have some older veteran type players. They have some people coming towards the end of their contracts, like Jed. So we got to figure out what we're doing there. So I could definitely see them with one of those picks going in that direction. And then I mentioned receiver too, because I even though we made the Jerry Jeudy move, I still feel like they need to continue addressing the position as much as possible to try to hit on a guy, because it's something that this front office has struggled with, is finding good receiver talent in the draft. So I could see them continuing to try to take shots and see if they can hit at some point. Okay, so that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you all enjoy watching the rest of March Madness, both men's and women's, this weekend. It's going to be super fun. Very excited to watch how it all goes down. Let me know if you like this mock draft situation. I could do another one next week. If not, I'll probably start getting into some other types of draft content, and just other off-season discussions that you want to have. Let me know if there's anything in particular you want me to talk about in regards to the roster or this upcoming season, or just any questions you have. I'm all ears, because off-season content, it gets tough. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you could leave a review or rating wherever you listen, that would be greatly appreciated. Subscribe, leave a comment on YouTube. Also subscribe on YouTube. I'd very much appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, go Browns.